Who is this handsome man?
This is Bruce Bennett Hammond, and this was when he was first commissioned as a second lieutenant in the regular Marine Corps in 1941.
My dad was a very caring person, but he wasn't demonstrative. I know that he loved me dearly. He never told me that.
I went over to Bremerton to see a friend who had been my close friend all through high school, and even before that. He came in to where we were having dinner in the mess hall, and I was introduced to him, and he asked me if he could call me, and then he did call me, and we went out, and we fell in love.
He could be a little intimidating. He was very quiet. He never, ever yelled. He never said a four-letter word. He said, if you can't use the King's English, then you should get a better education.
And his family was as much pioneer in the early Oregon days as my family was, and that was a very close bond for both of us.
And he loved the Marine Corps. He enjoyed being a United States Marine very, very much.
What did people do on dates at that time? What would you do?
Went
on
to
a
the
date?
Movies. Mm-hmm. That's about it, or else somebody had planned a party, mm-hmm. and or we went, like, going to see Cecily. We just had an afternoon visiting together.
And was Cecily the friend who married the Marine?
And I had known both of them all through secondary school and even before.
So how did your relationship with Bruce progress? Before you got married?
Well, it was rather rocky because it was war. And he would call me and come over from Bremerton to Seattle because he didn't have his car available. It was down in Medford. And so we took public transportation or taxis.
How would you describe Bruce's personality? If I was just to say, you know, what's he like?
He was reserved. And very polite, and very nice to me. Mm-hmm. We just held hands and talked, and he kissed me, the first time I'd ever been kissed. His sister had brought him up his car, and we were out on a date, and it was in the back seat of his car. It was quite exciting. I'd always lived at home. When I left, I turned 24 when I got to San Francisco. We left in the springtime. And at that time, Bruce was in San Francisco. So he met me at the plane, and I stayed with his sister in a hotel. He had asked her to come down, and we stayed together. And I think he was there for 3 days. And then I watched that beautiful big ship go out under the Golden Gate to go back to war.
Wake up and let's go find the rain is pattern. And you will find it, find no matter. Dark clouds will break up if you will wake up and then.
As it turned out, it came back in again because that was just the shakedown cruise. And I didn't know he'd come back. And I had moved in with Janice and Sylvia in the hotel where they were living, and we were madly looking for a place to live. Mm-hmm. And I found a place for us to live in Berkeley. They had lots of buildings with flats. There was a flat on every floor, and we were the top floor, the third floor flat. and it was fully furnished, and the people that owned the building were going to be gone for several months, and they wanted it just to, they wanted it occupied. And so I went over and was interviewed, and they said that it would be fine for us to live there. And it was a great apartment. I had my own small bedroom, and Janice and Sylvia had the bigger room with twin beds. We had a screened porch off to the east, and we could look across the bay at the city. And out the other way, we looked at the Hollywood, not the Hollywood Hills, the Berkeley, the Berkeley Hills. And from another, you see, we had the whole floor, and from another window, we could see the bridge. It was a delightful place to live, and we got along very, very well. Janice and Sylvia had roomed together all through the university, and I had taught with Janice. I had met her when we were in the preschool program, and she had gotten her master's degree in social work, and Sylvia had hers in dietetics. So they, Janice worked in Alameda, and Sylvia worked in Richmond in the shipyard. She was a dietitian in the lunchroom there, and I got a job with IBM, and I worked in their headquarters in San Francisco. Actually, my initial job was as a telephone operator. I did their switchboard, and I had worked on a switchboard when I was a junior in high school. They asked me if I would like to learn the switchboard, and I worked in the office. So that was where I got the experience.
Wow.
Yeah. So while I was there, I took a test, and they said I passed it higher than anybody that had ever taken it, but I don't know. I don't see how that's possible, because I wasn't very good on machines. Anyway, I also taught myself. I knew how to type, but I taught myself to use an electric typewriter, you know, when I wasn't busy on something else. Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, on the same weekend that Sylvia was notified that her father had had a serious heart attack, and we were going to have to look for another place to live. The people were coming back. We were going to have to leave. And Janice and I took Sylvia to the airport, and she was just, distraught. And come to find out, they lied to her. Her father was already dead.
Oh.
Isn't that awful?
That's horrible.
So then I had to take the train. Well, Janice was out looking for a place for herself to live, and I was going down to San Jose to open up a service bureau for IBM in the card factory. And she came running back, and she said, "I've lost my wallet." She didn't have any money at all.
Wow.
So I divided what I had, because I knew I was going. I had already been down to San Jose and found a room in a private home. So I knew where I was going, and I knew that I could get some money from the office when I went to work the next day. So I loaned Jan what I could, and she went off again to look for a place to live. And I went to the train station and took the train to San Jose, knowing not a living soul in San Jose. It was quite an amazing time for all of us.
The night of the 4th of February, 1944, we are laying quietly at anchor in the lagoon of Majuro. There is no illumination other than the moon and the blinking signal lights of the assembled might of the Pacific Fleet. The great hopes. This is just a ledger from the government printing office, a record as it's called. And it has in my father's handwriting, "Private Bruce B. Hammond." He wasn't a private, but it was private to him. So this is a journal that my father started on the 13th of February, 1944, which was exactly 40 years to the day that he died. And he only kept it for about 5 months during the Second World War, while he was stationed on, and he was stationed for a long time on the aircraft carrier, the Intrepid, of the Pacific Fleet. The great hulks of a dozen carriers with attendant battleships, cruisers, and small craft form vague silhouettes against the tropical sky. Being that my father spent 26 years of his life in the military, it's an interesting reflection because my father was very much against war. And I discovered this book after he died, and I'm in the process of typing it up. But he wrote beautifully, and it's really exciting to kind of learn more about him as a private person, especially a young man, because he was in his early 20s when he was keeping these. He was 24.
He was captain of the Marine Company aboard the aircraft carrier Intrepid, and they had come back in because they had taken damage from kamikaze airplanes going right into the deck. And the interesting thing about that is Bruce would be up on the bridge, and he was what they called a talker. There were talkers for each of the gun bays, and the Marines manned two of the gun bays, and so Bruce would tell them where to fire, because he was up there where he could see what was coming in. Mm-hmm. And he did not like the wind in his face. So when one of the pilots, thing that goes over the top to protect the pilots,
the shield,
there was one that wasn't damaged in one of the crashes, and he was able to mount that up on the bridge so that he could stand behind it. He could see just fine because they were clear. And they took a kamikaze right into the flight deck, right below the bridge, and the flames and the burning oil and everything came up. And the other people on the bridge were killed, and he wasn't.
Because he had the shield.
Because he had the shield.
Just because he didn't like the wind.
Yeah,
face.
Right.
Wow,
right.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Gives me goosebumps.
Yes, yes. And incredible. He would always say, you know, well, I was born under a black star. And because he went through all of the fighting in the South Pacific, of course, he wasn't on the ground slogging along, but he was on, I don't know how many times, the Intrepid was hit and had to come back. And they used to, they called the battleships Maru after the way the Japanese did. And they used to call, they kidded about the Intrepid being the Never Sail Maru because it had to come back for repairs so often. One time, it destroyed the rudder, and they had to be towed into Honolulu and Pearl Harbor and be repaired there and then come back for the final repairs. But, yeah, that was 44, and I was 24, the end of June. And I was hearing from Bruce regularly, and he had asked me to marry him. And I had felt he did that before he left to go back overseas, and I felt that we hadn't had enough time together.
Sometimes I wonder why I spend the lonely night dreaming of a song. The melody haunts my reverie, and I am once again with you.
I knew him very, very well from his letters. He, in fact, he could write to me better than he could talk.
Yeah. Yes.
And so I went down to San Jose, and I was in the roomed in this room, and actually Mother had come down to visit. And she was able to go with me when I went to San Jose to find a place to live. So it made her feel good to know that she knew exactly where I was living. And then I got to know several different people. And three of us went to live. They had this rooming house that had a communal kitchen. And then we each had a bedroom. Mm-hmm. And we used the kitchen. And that was a very nice arrangement. It really was. And I like that a lot better than just living in a room in somebody else's house. And then I heard from Bruce, but he was going up to Medford because his brother had been killed at Anzio. His brother was a captain in the army. And of course, his brother was 9 years older than he, and very much the apple of his mother's eye. So it was very, very difficult for his parents, and he went up there. And but he came to see me first in San Jose. And I just somehow couldn't. It's an interesting thing. I think the older you get as a woman, the harder it is to give up your independence and get married. Mm-hmm. It's for me, it was. And so after Bruce left and went up to Medford to be with his family, I decided that, you know, that I really did love him, and that he was the only person that I ever wanted to marry. So I called him and I told him that I really would like to marry him.
My stardust melody, the memory of love's refrain.
So he came back, and we went to see the Episcopal minister. And as far as I knew, my parents believed in adult baptism, and I had never been baptized. So the morning we were married on a Monday, and the morning that we were married, I was baptized, and Bruce was my sponsor, and Janice Hutchinson was going to be my maid of honor, and she was also my sponsor. We were married in the home of the mother of the head of the IBM there in San Jose. We were married in their home, and it was a very lovely occasion, but of course none of my family were there. It was a real wartime marriage, and I couldn't even find a white suit. I had a rose-colored suit and carried American Beauty roses. But the important thing was that Bruce and I were there, and that we knew that we wanted to spend our lives together. So that was the beginning of my married life, and we were living for a couple of days in an apartment that had belonged to someone that I knew in San Jose. And Bruce went off the morning after we were married. I guess it was a Monday. No, it was a Tuesday morning. And so, of course, we had no honeymoon. He reported back to the ship, and when he went aboard, the people at the top of the gangplank said, "Congratulations, sir." And he thought to himself, "How do they know I got married?" Well, as it turned out, his promotion to being a major had come through. So he couldn't stay in the job he had because he was too senior. So he was married, promoted, relieved, and detached all within 2 weeks. And we lived in a Quonset hut at Hunter's Point.
Wow.
The evening that he came home after he had, you know, he'd left me that morning, he came home and he had one of those little pins, you know, that says USMC, and suspended was the gold major's oak leaf. And that was how he told me he'd been promoted.
Wow.
And he was so excited. He was so excited.